Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Gregory Crudson is an acclaimed photographer who creates the scenes he captures in his pictures through days and weeks of production. Each element of each photo is placed with purpose, even if Crudson himself can't pinpoint where that purpose comes from. He shoots on streets and sound stages in and near the hill towns of Western Massachusetts. Filmmaker Ben Shapiro followed Gregory Crudson with his camera for over a decade as Crudson created his series Beneath the Roses. The resulting film, Gregory Crudson, Brief Encounters, is part of the Berkshire International Film Festival and will screen at the Mahawi on Sunday, June 3rd at 7 p.m. Gregory Crudson joins us now to talk about the film and his work. Gregory, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you.
Let's start for people who are possibly not yet familiar with your photography, and I'll have you, rather than me, try to describe your process and how you came to your process.
Well, I make photographs that are in many ways like a movie in terms of the production. At the core, I really consider myself a storyteller, but I'm interested in making pictures that tell a story through light and color. And I'm interested in finding a certain sense of mystery or strangeness in everyday life. And I make these pictures with a film crew, and we use lighting and staging. But it's all very much in an effort to try to find these beautiful and kind of elusive and mysterious moments.
You mentioned the crew. Watching the documentary, anybody could see that the crew is huge. I mean, like a film crew is, it's a lot of people. How do you find the people that you're going to work with?
Well, over the years, I've made most of my pictures in and around one area in a couple different towns. So over the years, I've been working with a core group. So the people I work with are very close collaborators.
And those towns, of course, are Berkshire towns.
That's right.
And you started coming to the Berkshires when you were a kid?
Right. I'm from Park Slope in Brooklyn. And my father, who's a psychoanalyst, founded a trust of land in Beckett in Massachusetts. So I've been coming to Massachusetts since I was a young child and started making pictures here seriously when I was a graduate student at Yale in the mid-80s. So I've been making, in some ways, the same version of the same picture over and over
that
again.
That isn't true.
Since then.
They're very different.
Well, at the core, the story remains the same, I guess. And that is, for whatever reasons, I'm continuing to be drawn to photograph a particular kind of place that has a particular kind of feel to it. And I always feel like the pictures could be somewhere or nowhere or anywhere, really kind of hovers between those places. That at the core, the pictures are about my own psychology, my own anxieties and fears and desires that is projected onto these familiar and ordinary towns and landscapes.
And you mentioned that you're a storyteller telling the stories. If you can articulate it, where do the stories come from? I mean, you said, you know, sort of, not abstractly, but emotionally, that they're exploring your own psychosis, but where does the actual tale, like the thread of the story, come from? How do you decide what characters will be present in the picture?
I think a lot of that is elusive. It's a mystery that, as an artist, you work and rework over certain themes over and over again in an effort to try to make sense of your life in a certain way. And that I have been drawn to make certain kinds of pictures, and I'm not quite sure what they mean in a certain way, that it's really important that they remain mysterious to me. But that I've always been interested in this tension, this uncanny tension between something that feels on the surface very familiar and very ordinary, but by the way it's photographed, by the use of light and color, it becomes mysterious and strange. The pictures, on a literal level, come to me when I'm location scouting.
I wanted to ask you about that. There's at least one scene I can think of where you're driving around scouting. You let Ben Shapiro, the filmmaker, be right with you as you're scouting, and you don't set out knowing exactly what you're looking for.
Right. That's sort of, again, a kind of elusive process. It happens months before the production. And in some ways, it's my favorite part because I'm alone. There's a certain kind of freedom in roaming. And I go over and over again to certain locations. And I'm looking for something that feels, again, like that it could accommodate one of my pictures, that it has, that it feels nondescript in a certain way and familiar in another way, but also that it could provide a setting for a narrative. So I'll do this over and over again for weeks on end. And through this process of location scouting, an image will come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if once the image comes, it's once it sticks, it's there. And then from there, that starts a very long process of working with an increasingly larger group of people to actually make this picture a reality.
And then finding the human beings who will be in the photo, how do you get them? I imagine it's an assortment of ways. People you know, people on your crew know, people they find for you.
Right. It's a combination of those people. I've worked closely with a local casting director. I've also used people that I've just seen on the street. I tend not to want to use known actors,
mm-hmm.
but I know I'm drawn to particular kinds of types. Again, there has to be a certain kind of feeling or uncanniness in their being, I think.
And it's not, I wouldn't presume that it's as simple as this, but in the pictures that I've seen, none of them are model types. Like, they're people, and that's important, I imagine.
Right. They're people, but I also feel that there has to be a certain kind of alienation or disconnect in terms of my relationship to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know them particularly
okay.
well.
Okay.
I want to remain slightly alien to them, or they should feel alien to me. And by the time we make a picture and they're on the set, I have a very set and very clear idea of where they should be standing and
how they should be looking.
Yeah, it's all like in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no improv whatsoever.
No,
yes.
None. And you mention and shoot several of the pictures at twilight. Why is that quality of light particularly special?
Well, on a functional level, it's the only time when my artificial lights can work in concert with the ambient light of the sun. That's a very short window, mm-hmm. Short window of time where that works. But also on another level, twilight generally is a very evocative time. It's very much a transitional time. It's a period between one point and another. And I think my pictures are very much about that kind of intersection, about a moment between one moment and the next. There's no before or after in photographs. There's just the frozen and mute time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the moment I'm interested in. And I hope that it will always remain a mystery or a question and never resolves itself.
Do you think or hope that people looking at that moment extrapolate a story?
Yeah, I think that since photographs, unlike a movie,
right.
or other narrative forms, has no beginning or end, I think it's up to the viewer to bring their own story to it, their own history, their own psychology. And it's my hope that they are drawn to the picture and connect to it in a certain way.
You were also able to, apart from scouting locations and discovering those, you shot on some sound stages at Massmoca. How did you decide to do that, and how did that work itself out?
Well, in Beneath the Roses, which is the central body of work that the movie documents, which was, in fact, 8 years in the making from beginning to end,
mm-hmm.
There are two ways of making pictures. There's the pictures made on location in different neighborhoods, and then there's the interiors, which are all made on sound stages. And the reason I originally made the pictures on the soundstage was at a certain point, just because of the scale of the productions, it was very hard to photograph in people's homes.
Right, in a real room.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly lighting was a big issue. And then I became much more interested in sort of controlling every aspect of the set design. So working on a soundstage, you could pick out the wallpaper or the color of the wall, or you could construct the room in any way you'd like. So that was another challenge. So in those pictures, unlike the other ones, you're starting from zero in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So in those pictures, those usually came to me in, through my imagination, but usually when I'm swimming, I do long distance swimming in lakes and pools. And when I'm swimming, I get lost in my own thoughts, and an image will come up. And then once that image gets in my head, then I work with my assistant to reference it, like use other movie sources and start to think about the space. And then I work with a art director to start making drawings and architectural drawings of these spaces. And then I work with a big art department to build these things.
And the image comes into your mind and you don't lose it. Because I know if I'm, for example, driving and I think of something I need to do or, you know, want to, whatever. And then a lot of times I reach my destination and have forgotten it completely. But you're always able to hold on to it.
I think it's the only thing I do know how to hold on to. I think in my life, I have a somewhat chaotic existence. I feel like I'm constantly moving from New York, where I live part-time, to New Haven, where I teach at Yale, to Massachusetts, where I live part-time. And so there's a lot of chaos in my life.
Uh-huh.
But images are the way I understand the world, and they're fixed and still and ordered. And so when I hold on to an image, I really grab onto it.
You mentioned teaching at Yale. What do you enjoy about teaching? Why is it important for you to fit that into your schedule?
Right. Well, I'm the director of the graduate photography department at Yale, and it's a very small program. It's a 2-year program with 9 students a year.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's a really privileged context to try to make sense of pictures and try to come to terms with the meaning of pictures and the tradition and the history of pictures and why they're important. And it's also always interesting to be in contact with the next generation of artists that are coming up. And certainly there's things you can learn from younger generation of artists.
Let's talk about how you met Ben Shapiro, the filmmaker, whose idea it was to make the documentary, and why you said, yeah, follow me around for all of these years and all of my work.
Well, like everything else, it seems like it just happened kind mm-hmm. of organically. But the first footage he shot was actually in 2001. And I think he originally came as a hired hand, as a cameraman for a documentary on PBS, I think it was. First met him then.
Uh-huh.
And then he came a second time also as a cameraman for something else. And then I think that he realized at a certain point that this might be interesting to follow through on his mm-hmm. own time. And he asked me if that would be okay. And I said, absolutely. When we're making pictures, there's so much going on anyway that like...
He wasn't going to distract you
too
much.
No, I don't think so.
And you're very focused, so he doesn't get to.
Right. So he was just there sort of in and out of productions over the years. It just became kind of part of the fabric of the productions.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought enough about it to think that there would actually be a movie at the end of this.
Uh-huh.
And I used to tease him about it, saying like, well, you're not actually making a movie, are you, in the end? And I never saw any of the footage either over all these years. And at a certain point, he really surprised me and told me there was actually a movie at the end. That he's finished, finished movie. And, of course, that was an unsettling prospect.
Have you watched the whole thing?
Yes, I've seen the film a few times. The first time I saw it with my assistant, Kazi, we went to his house or his apartment in Manhattan and watched it. And the first time, it was just really hard to watch. It was really difficult. In fact, I think at the end of it, I was speechless. And then I saw it a few more times where he continued to make final cuts. And then I saw it once in a, he arranged a private screening at the Beacon Theater in Pittsfield. And that was the first time I saw it on a big screen. And by that time, I thought it was, I had seen it enough to separate myself from it mm-hmm. as much as I could. And I thought it was really terrific.
What was hard about watching it the first time? The usual stuff you didn't like seeing yourself just going about or?
Well, so yeah, it's very hard to watch yourself in any case. And it's, I think, particularly hard for photographers who are, or filmmakers who are used to being on the other side of the lens. That was unsettling. Also, during the last years of Beneath the Roses, I was going through a lot of changes in my own life and went through a separation. And so for me, it's also very hard to see myself during that period of my life where I was, I think, although very fulfilled by my work, I was going through a lot of personal, like a personal crisis right. and personal unhappiness that I wasn't even aware of.
So, yeah, I can't imagine how hard it would be to look and go, oh, right, I was feeling that way then.
It was very painful.
Yeah.
And still is painful to watch. But I am so thankful that the movie is made because I think it captures a period of time and a body of work that I think is, for me, terrific that it was documented. And I think so much goes into these pictures that almost no one can even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
That's really nice to have at all in a movie.
Right, so people can get some idea about it.
Right.
At least if I don't, I still feel I don't fully comprehend everything that goes into it, but you get some idea of the detail.
Well, I don't comprehend any of it really in a certain way. Actually, when I look at it now, because that body of work is now complete,
right.
I am, one of my reactions always is like, how did we actually do that? You know, how did we close down that street? And, you know, that's kind of amazing to me.
How did you know that the series was over when it was time, when you were shooting your last shot of that series?
I knew it, absolutely. It was just, I think artists always reach these points where there's a completion to something and a resolution, and that's a very terrifying prospect. But it's also so important for an artist to continually try to reinvent themselves over and over again, even though the central story remains the same. But I felt like at a certain point, I knew how to make this kind of picture, that it took me years to sort of figure it out. And by the end of it, I feel like I knew how to do it. Uh-huh. And I also felt like a little bit of, by the end of it, like a captive in the whole thing. Like there's so much production and that I sometimes felt like trapped in the whole production.
Uh-huh.
And I knew the next thing I had to do would be something dramatically different and more organic and try to reconnect with the very act of making a picture.
What have you been working on lately?
Well, after this body work, I made a series of pictures in a soundstage in the backlot of Cinecittà in Rome, mm-hmm. the collapsed old movie sets in black and white with no lighting. And now I am just in the process of beginning a new body of work. I just moved my studio from New York to Massachusetts. I now live in a church in Massachusetts. And so I'm just beginning to think about the next body of work, and I'm going to make it up here for sure.
Gregory, thank you very much for coming to the studio and for talking with me today.
It's my pleasure. I'm a big fan.
Gregory Crudson, Brief Encounters, screens at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts on Sunday, June 3rd at 7 p.m. as part of the Berkshire International Film Festival. To learn more, visit BIFFMA.org or GregoryKrudsonMovie.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.